Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very exciting person who has spent a lot of time in media. He spent time in advertising, and then he's an entrepreneur. So he's one of the few people who we have who has moved from a professional career into an entrepreneurial career. Alok Agarwal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Alok is from IIT Kanpur. I am Bangalore. He's from Wharton. He spent time in advertising with Bates, Gray, and Samsung. And then he worked in the media business with Zee and was the CEO of Network 18. He's now the founder of the Growth Labs. So Alok, moving from advertising to media to becoming an entrepreneur, quite amazing changes. Tell us a little bit about your career and some of your learnings.
Well, it has been an exciting journey. And as you can imagine, big changes when you move from one field to another. I spent a large part of my career, initial career, in advertising and marketing, almost over 20 years. And then I made the switch to media. There is a lot of symbiotic relationship between the advertising industry and media. But the businesses are very different. A lot of people don't realize they think it's all the same, with two sides of the same coin, etc. You're actually sitting on the other side. But the business skills and so on are very different. Therefore, that required a lot of relearning and retraining and so on. But it was very exciting. Of course, some of the common nuances you understand. But it's still quite a different business. A significant portion of my time in media went into news, which has a lot of dynamics of its own. It's highly complicated and complex business. So it was exciting. And then about 3 years ago, I decided to be on my own.
So what made you move from such a successful corporate career to becoming an entrepreneur?
Well, it was, I would say that I always had a bit of this entrepreneurial thing in me. I wanted to be on my own. And finally, I took the plunge after having spent 25 years in corporate. And said, let me do something by myself. So that's when we started the Growth Labs. And it's been very interesting over the last 3 years.
So I'm going to come to the Growth Labs. But let's talk about your stint in media.
Right.
You know, you went in at a time when the entire media business had become relatively mature, if I can use
right.
that term. What were some of the changes you saw as compared to, you know, when I'm older than you,
right.
from my time when it was a single Doordarshan, which all them used to wait for
right.
Chitrahar and the Sunday movie, to a plethora of channels.
Right.
And you just mentioned you focused on news.
Right.
How did you see media changing?
So you're right. I reached at a time when broadcast media, and I moved primarily into broadcast media, broadcast media was fully matured out, and we have today over 800 channels across India, over 400 news channels and so on. And therefore, very matured, highly segmented, niched out market and so on. And therefore, a tough business for any player. And I joined this business 7-8 years ago, the first real impact of digital news or digital media was coming in. So those years, there was still no streaming service. We didn't have the right kind of bandwidths and so on. And therefore, there were no OTT players. But a couple of years down the line, we started seeing streaming services coming in. But digital news media was already kind of becoming quite strong. And we now see that all of us rely heavily on digital news rather than the traditional forms
Correct.
Of news. And now, in the last couple of years, OTT has really taken off. And streaming services are getting a lot of traction. So that was the big winds of change which were blowing. And therefore, you had to start setting your sights on what kind of digital play you were going to have and what kind of products and services we would have in the market so that we were ready for the future.
Very interesting. So tell me, you know, in the last 7, 8, 10 years, with all the changes happening, the millennials are virtually driving decision making of all business leaders. How are they changing media?
Well, millennials understand the digital medium a lot more than the traditional format.
Correct.
So a lot of millennials never read a newspaper or don't try to catch up on TV. They would do everything on their handheld devices, and therefore they're closer to the formats which are available on handheld devices. But more importantly, also that their sources are different, you know. So they would not go to a traditional media outlet to get their information. They would get it from aggregation on social media. And when it is social media, then the sources at times may be subjective, and you know, they may be suspect, which many of them don't realize that the source is suspect, and therefore there's this whole rise of fake news and so on. So that is something which I think over a period of time, the consumers are also slowly learning and evolving what to really believe and what not to believe. But it's an evolutionary process. But primarily there, in their case, the devices they use, therefore the mediums they use, the channels they use, everything is different.
Very interesting. So with this change coming, and with millennials now taking a call not to go to traditional television channels, what will happen to the traditional broadcast media?
See, in a country like ours, we are a very vast country, and the penetration of television even today is not 100%, right? So not everybody in our country has access to the traditional forms of media. To expect the new forms of media to reach out to everyone is still some time away. Bulk of the market still is dependent on traditional forms of media. Even now, print media is growing. India is possibly the only market where print media is growing. Television continues to grow, although at a much lower rate. So we still have high dependence on traditional forms of media. It serves the mass audiences very well. There is a lot of sunk cost, and therefore the infrastructure development cost and so on is relatively low. And it's a well-oiled machinery which is working. But winds of change, I mean, the new media is coming in very strongly.
Yeah.
And things may penetrate a lot more quickly than believers of traditional media.
Correct. Correct. And entertainment seems to have virtually emerged from the OTT platforms.
Not if you look at the mass scale. There is a lot of option, of course, on an OTT platform. Television continues to be much more significant in its reach, but it is changing rapidly.
I agree. So Alok, let's move to the Growth Labs. You know, tell us a little bit about the scope of the operations of Growth Labs.
Right. The Growth Labs, we primarily focus on bringing innovation and startup engagement to large corporations. We find, you know, when we started, we find that a lot of large corporations, traditional outfits, are caught in a time warp. You know, the way they work, the processes, the kind of technologies they use, the way their people think and so on, is something which is designed for an era gone by, and it is changing rapidly, much like what we discussed in terms of media. Every field is changing rapidly because of not just the new technology coming in. People tend to confuse it just the technology adoption, but it's also a completely new way of working. There are new business models, new processes, and people are changing the basic premise on which a business is built. And some of that thinking, unless the large corporations adopt, they're not going to survive.
Right.
So our whole effort is to encourage these companies to adopt these new innovative technologies, business models, processes, etc., to be ready for the future.
And when you say that you help companies to scale up, what does it mean? And how would you do it?
So scale up in the sense that, like scale up means,
yeah,
right? It is increasing revenue lines. And therefore, what we focus on is how can we add more lines of revenue which lead to incremental growth rather than significant incremental growth rather than the slow rate of growth which everybody has, you know, single digit growth rates which are usually popular.
Right.
And how do we say, so today, if you look at the new businesses, they're not looking at how do I grow my this line of business, X line of business by 10%, but they're looking at what additional line of business can I add, which will give me a business equivalent to what I have in the next 3 years or 2 years or whatever, right? So that's one of the things, of course, changing the entire way the supply side is structured, the processes are built, rethinking customer engagement completely and entirely, and see how we, you know, so just to give you an example, traditional, we were talking about media, so let's stick to media. Traditional media is almost entirely dependent on advertising revenue, which is a significant part of what they earn.
Yeah.
But new media, if you see, is slowly moving to subscription-based, because advertising revenue does not justify. Now, that's a different relationship. Today, the customer is used to getting media for free. Somebody else is paying for it. But of course, what they are giving is their time and their engagement and so on. Versus when they are paying for it, their demands are going to be absolutely different. Then they will start dictating what kind of content is relevant to them and what they should consume, because they're paying for it. Similarly, if you look at automobiles, for example, you know, so the whole market is shifting towards people not wanting to own vehicles, but still have mobility available to them.
Correct.
And therefore, the mindset of the entire industry has to change dramatically.
Very true. So, you also mentioned, when I'm reading about the Growth Labs, and you just spoke about it, you said that you enable partnerships between large companies and startups.
Right.
Two questions. One is, how do you do this enabling? And second, can you give me an example without giving names?
Okay. Enabling start. So, like I said, we focus on adding innovation, and therefore, one part of that is consulting exercises from our side. But we are also seeing that the maximum innovation is being done by the startup. They're bringing in completely new thinking, not just in new technologies, but new business models, etc. So what we try and do is go in, understand the company's key problems or key areas of focus which offer an opportunity. Identify startups which may be working in that space. They may be early or not so early startups, growth stage startups, and do a matchmaking between the company and the startups.
Okay.
So there are some well-established programs that are out there, whether it's an innovation art, through hackathons, through developer programs, etc., depending on what all resources the large company has. We do a search and discovery through a process like this, and once we have identified, then we try to do a matchmaking. So one of the things I keep telling everyone is that these startups and the large corporations speak two different languages. And if they try to do it themselves, they're not going to be very successful.
Correct.
Because very soon the conversation breaks down. You know, a startup CEO, maybe a youngster, wants to sit with the CEO of the large company, because he says, I'm also a CEO. But the two are going to talk very different languages.
Correct.
And therefore, somebody like us who has worked on both sides understands the requirements of each other, and we try to manage that partnership and relationship going forward.
Very interesting. So one last question for the Growth Lab before we move to some startups. You know, thousands of people will be watching you and me talking.
Right.
A lot of them are startup entrepreneurs. How does a startup entrepreneur reach out to you to seek help?
Well, they reach out through social media. We have our website, and therefore people are constantly visiting the website. We reach out through various forums. So I and my partner, we attend constantly many startup events and so on. We participate in them, speak at those ventures. So that's how people get to know us. There are specific mentoring programs we participate in and offer free mentoring, etc. So personally, I'm involved with the mentoring program, which is between IIT Delhi and IIM Bangalore. We've kind of jointly put together a joint mentoring program where there are a number of very, very experienced people like me who are offering free mentorship to startups. So every month we meet once, and there is a fair amount of fair number of startups who land up, and that's how the word spreads, and they all kind of talk to each other and spread the word.
Okay. So let's move with all the last 3, 4, 5 years experience of the Growth Labs. Let's talk about your learnings from startups, you know. So let me start with the first question, which is, you know, and I've spoken to many people. Some people think that if I'm a startup entrepreneur, I should have a co-founder.
Right.
Some people say I should go solo. What are your thoughts?
I quite strongly believe that they should not go solo.
Okay.
They should have a partner. Again, number of partners, I don't think there is a definitive number, but it can't be too many. So possibly four is a limit, not go beyond four. But I personally think one is a bad idea.
Okay.
Because you do need a sounding board. You need somebody who works as a foil, you know, who's constantly talking to you. And it cannot be, so many people understand this and they take a minority. I mean, really tiny shareholding they will give to the other guy. In which case, it is not a partnership.
Right.
And therefore, those relationships don't really work out. It works well. If you look at all the successful examples, it is really two peas in a pot, you know.
So, Alok, you know, again, based on all the people you've interacted with, what has been your learning of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
The biggest mistake they make is that most startup entrepreneurs are technology guys, the product guys, right? They have an idea to develop a product or a solution which is based on technology. Not always necessarily with technology, but definitely a new business idea. They spend almost their entire time in trying to develop the product, develop the supply chain and so on, which I call the supply side, but pay very little attention to demand side. You know, so on selling, on marketing, on go-to-market, etc. And they try to outsource it. They'll go to somebody saying, now I've made this, please help me sell this. Or you sell it for me.
Yeah.
Right? Actually, at the end of the day, business is about selling. You are an expert in that, right? If you can't sell it, why make it? But people tend to make things and then really struggle to sell it. So my advice always to people is spend a lot more time in learning the demand side, you know, understanding customers, understanding the entire sales channels and marketing, or go-to-market strategies and plans and so on. Spend a lot more time and effort selling.
So, you know, we just spoke a little while ago about the growth labs helping startups scale up.
Right.
My question to you is, when should a startup start thinking of scaling up?
Startup has to always think of scaling up.
Okay.
Right. Because when they start at zero. And when you're zero, then there is only one way to go.
Correct.
Which is ahead. So they have to constantly think of scaling up. And I think that thinking has also changed in business, which the startups have brought. There is no stage when you say, okay, enough. Let me take things quietly. Let things just chug along for a while I fix other parts. I think new age companies are teaching that is never the case. Because the minute you stop scaling and growing is the time when you start declining.
But there have also been many, many instances where a promoter decided to scale up fast and didn't have the systems to be able to go.
Right. So, yes, scaling up is, of course, a fine balance. You can spend too much money too quickly and burn it. So, I mean, again, if there was a rule book, then a lot more people would be successful.
Sure.
It is a tough balance. But that doesn't mean that you'll stop. You'll say, no, let me make everything very nice and beautiful, and then go ahead.
It is a fine, I agree with you. Fine balance. One of the other challenges that a lot of entrepreneurs face is raising money.
Right.
What would your thoughts be for entrepreneurs who want to raise money?
Raising money is a tough one.
Yeah.
Everybody needs money. The problem is because there are lots of bad ideas which also need money. Therefore, the whole process has become one of, a selection-based process, and very small percentage actually get money. You have to be at it. What I find is that a lot of people tend to be very close-minded. You know, when they're out there trying to raise money, there is always a lot of learning and feedback which comes to you. How much of that learning and feedback are they taking, putting it back into their pitch decks, into their plans, and saying, okay, this is how I'm going to go back.
Sure.
And then there are some who are the extreme, who listen to everything. Oh, okay, investor told me, let's do this. So let's do this. And they will forget what they started out with completely and completely gets. So you have to be able to listen, but you have to stick to your core story, you know, because that's something only you are passionate about. Yeah. Everybody else will have ideas, yeah, but you will have to control it.
So look, a few questions about you personally now. You know, you've had a nice career. Have you had any mentors? And if yes, what kind of influence have they had on you?
I have not kind of relied on any one person being a mentor. One had, of course, the good fortune of working with a lot of very learned people over my career. But somehow I never got into my head saying, hey, this is the guy I would call my mentor and always go back to this person. But sure, there are lots of people who one has learned from.
So the conversely, you mentor a lot of people.
Right.
What is it that you give to them as a mentor?
Well, I believe I give them some good advice. I try to focus on the professional aspects. A lot of people would try to also balance and maybe provide advice on personal aspects. I don't think I'm competent enough to do that. Maybe don't have the emotional quotient to be able to provide them. So I focus on the professional aspects of the relationship.
And also a lot of the wisdom which you have gained over the years.
Right. The experiences which I've had.
Correct. Correct. So my next question to you is, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
I do that quite often, especially since I'm working in the field of innovation. So definitely there is a lot of new learning which I imbibe. The fact that after having done 25 years of media and advertising, I'm doing innovation programs like this means that most of what I do now, I did not do in my career earlier. So quite often.
Wonderful, wonderful. So next question that I'm going to ask you is on failure. You know, in our country, we don't teach the people that it is okay to fail.
Right.
We are all the time being told you have to come first, you will be ahead of class, etc., etc. It manifests itself in our behavior. And yet we know that we have all failed several times.
Sure.
What have been some of your learnings from some mistakes or failures that you may have made?
Right. See, of course, failures are a part of life. We've all been through failures. One of the learnings I have got is that I have come to strongly believe that oftentimes we fail because we haven't put in enough effort. While we were doing it, we always thought, oh, I'm putting in the best and I'm doing the most and so on. But in hindsight, my one learning has always been, did not put in enough. Whether it is enough money, enough effort, enough thought to it, enough team, work, etc. But something has been missing or lacking. That's number one. Number two is that there are times that you will fail. You tried and there are things which work out and there are things which are which don't. So that was one of the things, you know, when you're in corporate life, for example, you are drilled down to, you cannot fail. This is your target, you must achieve it and so on. But now that I am on my own, I try new experiments all the time, and that's what I encourage people to do. Now when we're talking about innovation, we go and tell people, you don't know whether it's going to work or not, because this is something entirely new. And therefore, there is a very high chance that you will fail. But unless you try it, you will not be able to do something different from what you have been doing, and therefore, how will your fortunes change? So failures are also a part of life. If you start accepting, saying, maybe I will, and that is a bit of a, you know, blow to the ego as well.
Correct.
Because as corporate individuals, we are all taught to, no, you have to, bravado is the main thing. And therefore, how can you accept failure saying we tried this but it didn't? You want to always prove in those presentations that things went fine and everything was very good. So you have to stand up and admit that this didn't work is take some doing.
Correct.
But failures will what will make you more successful in the long run.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. So Alok, do you have any regrets?
I don't think about regrets. If one was to start listing down all the pros and cons, so I'm sure there are things that one would want to do differently. But I never really like to think of, so it's part of life, right? Those were my failures if something didn't work out. And these were my successes. Do I get bang from time to time? Sure, why not? Maybe that could have been a little different. This could have been better, etc. But I don't really like to go back and think about it.
Wonderful. Well said. So Alok, my last question to you. Again, coming back to startups. A lot of young people watch us. If I am a young startup entrepreneur wanting to start a new business, what advice would you give to me before I start off?
I believe that the most important skill required for a startup to succeed is resilience, right? When you start off, you don't know how that journey is going to be. There is no clear path which is laid out in front of you, and therefore you don't know which way to go and so on. You have to try hundreds of different things. Very few will succeed, most of them will fail. And therefore it needs resilience. If you can let things get you down, saying, hey, X is not happening, I'm not able to raise money, my supply chain isn't working out, I'm not getting customers, etc., then you will obviously fail. But you have to keep trying to go back and beat it. But when somebody is starting out, the only thing they can bank on is their own resolve and their own ability. Okay. Nothing else. They're starting with nothing else. It's just their resolve and their ability which is going to make or break them. And that's the thing they have to constantly keep falling back on, with resilience. And if they have resilience, they will succeed.
Wonderful. Alok, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
I wish Growth Labs lots of success.
Thank you.
And thank you for being on our show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.